This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. And of course, Law and Behold is our monthly segment, which continues to arm Malaysians with constitutional literacy and is done in collaboration with the Malaysian Bar and the University of Malaya's Faculty of Law. So this month, we're going to discuss what went down during the first 4 days of the special third parliamentary proceeding of the 14th term, which was filled with shocking announcements, royal statements, and also perhaps the fact that we are in the midst of a constitutional crisis. Are we? I'm not sure. Joining me now to explain all of this and more is lawyer New Sin Yu. Welcome, Sin Yu. How are you today?
Good, good. Yeah, very exciting week we have. So it's good to have some sort of reprieve, you know, on a Friday. No, nothing is going on. Hopefully, we don't know yet.
We don't know, right? I mean, everything. Yesterday's announcement was a shocker, but let's just start from right from the beginning, right? So we know that Parliament finally reconvened on Monday, and that was after a break of about 7 months. Even getting to this point was really tough, right? I mean, we had to have His Majesty, the YDPA, decree that, you know, it should reconvene as soon as possible. Remind us about that, you know, even getting to that point, getting Parliament to reconvene.
Well, there was a huge hue and cry, if I can put it mildly, earlier this month. In fact, there has been, you know, leading up to this month. And there were a number of meetings, special meetings, which the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong had with a number of individuals. And that led to the Cabinet's decision middle of this month to convene a special meeting of Parliament where the ordinances were supposed to be laid before Parliament.
That's right.
I'll get into that in greater detail later on. But the first meeting, it happened on Monday, but there were a number of things that had taken place before that, which had led to the whole controversy, which we saw yesterday. I suppose the whole controversy, we have to really look at it in great detail, especially the dates where things happened. So before Monday, 26th of July, Cabinet had a meeting on the 21st. And a decision has been made, as we had learned from a statement from the Prime Minister's office, that the emergency ordinances will be revoked. So 23rd of July was when the advice from Cabinet was communicated to the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong.
Okay.
And I use advice is because the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong, he acts on advice. He was the authority that had promulgated these ordinances, and he is the only authority that can revoke it. So the catch being, because we are in a constitutional monarchy, the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong acts on advice of the Cabinet. So even though he is the authority, he cannot freely exercise such powers without advice, and he can only exercise it with advice. So that's the constitutional principle underpinning his exercise of powers. So that's 23rd of July. 24th of July, we learned that the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong had a meeting, online meeting, with the Attorney General as well as the Law Minister.
That's right.
Where it was, the word used was the cadangkan, proposed for the revocation of the ordinances to be tabled before Parliament.
That's right.
And then we have 26th of July. So 26th of July was the first day of sitting. Very messy sitting.
Utter chaos.
The 26th of July was when the Law Minister, to everyone's surprise, came out and said that ordinances have been revoked. So there is no need to lay it before Parliament. There is no need to debate it. There is no need to vote on it. So that happened. Of course, there were a lot of questions that came after that because no one knew, no one seemed to know. And we checked the Gazette. Even in the Gazette, there was nothing there. So his statement in Parliament, even from the moment he said it, everyone knew it was inaccurate because the revocation is not something that you could just say and, you know, presto, it has been revoked.
Right.
There are certain rules and procedures that you must follow, which would culminate in a gazette of the revocation being published online and as well as physical copies. So everyone checked online because it's readily available on the Attorney General's website. Mm-hmm. It wasn't there. So, you know, that's the beginning of the sinkhole, if I can put it mildly.
I think that is a very mild phrase for what happened. And it's strange as well, right? Because we know that when the Prime Minister announced the July parliamentary meeting, he stated that based on Article 153 of the Federal Constitution, all the emergency proclamations and ordinances made by His Majesty shall be laid before the Houses of Parliament. Am I correct? And then poof, on Monday, you know, they say, oh, actually, everything had been already revoked. So, yeah, that was, I mean, there's clear sort of disconnect between what was being said and what actually happened. When this happened, right, on Monday, right, a lot of people were actually asking, why is this such a big deal, you know, because the opposition kept pressing the issue, right? They were like, you know, has the Agong consented to this? Has His Majesty consented to this? And then, you know, Parliament said that, I mean, the minister said that, you know, he'll give his answers on Monday. There was a lot of questions from regular folk asking, why is this such a big deal? What would your answer be to that?
It's a big deal because we are in an emergency, and the powers that is exercised by the government in an emergency, it's immense. It's very wide powers where you can practically bypass any provisions of the Constitution. So along with that comes certain safeguards.
Mm.
And one of those safeguards is emergency, and all of the ordinances that is made during the emergency must be laid before Parliament for Parliament to supervise. And Parliament supervises it by either, well, firstly by sitting, as they would, they're supposed to do, but they didn't. It got suspended for 7 months. And they also exercise this supervisory function by either approving or annulling the emergency or the ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have seen is the government bypassing this or frustrating this supervisory function of Parliament and also undermining what the Constitution had intended, how the emergency is supposed to operate. And the emergency doesn't just say that, government, you get to do anything you want.
Mm.
The emergency, Article 150 says that you get very wide powers, but there are certain conditions that are attached to it. So these conditions that are attached to it, it's being bypassed, and it creates a very scary situation. And I think this is one of the points raised by one of the MPs. Was it Syed Saddiq? I think it was Syed Saddiq yesterday, who said that, you know, whatever this government decides to do and whatever that precedent that is being set here today, it creates a precedent for what future dictators,
yeah,
I think that was the word use, might use. And he's right, because if you set out from the very get-go to bypass Parliament by suspending it, not allowing it to sit, you know, purportedly, allegedly, on the guise of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that yesterday again,
in
the afternoon session.
Yes, we did.
Which was utterly ridiculous, I thought. But if you set off from the very beginning on a journey to, you know, just frustrate any sort of check and balance that the very institution that's supposed to do it, being Parliament, then you create this precedent where you can do whatever you want, you know, really without anyone questioning. And you hide behind standing orders, you hide behind what was supposed to be rules to facilitate the function of parliament. And now the rules themselves have become more important than the function. Then it is a big deal. And I think, you know, the YDPA realizes it. And for the very first time, I think, in history, you have a constitutional monarch coming out to say that the government has acted unconstitutionally. And I think it's worth reading out what the Yang Li Putaranggong had said, because it's just so shocking. So the Yang Li Putaranggong, His Majesty was fully aware of what his role under the Constitution is. Sri Paduka Baginda sedia maklum akan perlunya Baginda bertindak mengikut nasihat jemaah menteri seperti terkandung dalam perkara 40 kurungan 1 Perlembagaan Persekutuan. Now here's the interesting part. Namun, Sri Paduka Baginda menzahirkan pandangan bahawa Baginda selaku ketua utama negara mempunyai kewajipan untuk menyampaikan nasihat dan teguran jika berlaku sebarang tindakan yang tidak berperlembagaan oleh mana-mana pihak, khususnya mereka yang melaksanakan fungsi dan kuasa KDYMM Sri Paduka Baginda Yang di-Pertuan Agong. So if you take this statement and you break it down, which I will, clearly His Majesty is saying that you are abusing Article 150, you're abusing His Majesty's powers. And, you know, some might say that, oh, aren't we giving the monarchy too much power?
That's right, yeah.
I would say that it's a very thin line. We're treading on very thin ice. But I think the Yang Li Putaranggong was right. He was justified. And he has indeed the duty to counsel, to encourage, and to warn His Majesty's government. And I think that is something that is recognized even in the Westminster system. And His Majesty is at liberty to express his opinions on the use of certain emergency powers, mm-hmm. including that of His Majesty, as well as on the proclamation of emergency, and perhaps even warn the Prime Minister against doing certain things. And of course, such communications, it is meant to be confidential between the YDPA and the Prime Minister. So it's shocking to me, at least, in the sense that this is made public. And I suppose, you know, His Majesty would definitely know that it's supposed to be confidential, it's supposed to be public. Yet he had chosen to take this step by making it public. Mm-hmm. So the next question is why? I think the situation necessitated him to do that. Of course, if the Prime Minister yields, in the sense that the Prime Minister decides to follow His Majesty's counsel and advice, then the Yang Li Putaranggong is justified. But if the Prime Minister persists, then the Yang Li Putaranggong must give way, consistent with principles of constitutional monarchy, acting on advice of the executive. So it is a big deal, because there is, for me at least, already a constitutional crisis, in the sense that Parliament has been bypassed, the federal constitution has been ignored, and now we are seeing a tension between the executive and the monarchy. So it is a big deal.
Okay, it's a huge deal, Sinew. I'm speaking today to New Sinew. He's a lawyer, and we're talking about everything that went down in these first 4 days of the special third parliamentary proceeding of the 14th term. Shocking statements, you know, from cabinet, and also then from His Majesty, the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong. We're going to continue this discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Law and Behold on the Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me today is Niu Sin Yu, a lawyer, and we are discussing what went down in Parliament. You know, these last 4 days, so much happened. It was utter chaos, as Sin Yu and I were talking about. And before the break, Sin Yu broke down what happened, you know, when it came to the emergency ordinances, which were supposed to have been tabled and debated, but then came the shocking statement that it had already been revoked. Then came the even more shocking statement from His Majesty Yang Di-Pertuan Agong, saying he was amat duka cita, right, with the conduct of the law minister and also of the Speaker of the House. So you broke down what the Agong said in his statement and his reasons for saying so and why you think we're in a constitutional crisis. But, you know, you did mention about whether the Prime Minister yields. And right yesterday evening, right, the Prime Minister's office released a statement defending the decision to revoke the emergency ordinances through a vote in Parliament, right? Maybe you can walk us through some of the explanations that were given and also your thoughts on these explanations.
Well, we learned that the Prime Minister did not yield.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you know, the Prime Minister's office released their version of events, which was what I used as the basis of the chronology, which I've set out earlier.
That's right.
And we learned that on the I stopped at the 26th, I think, on the first day of sitting. So we learned on the 27th of July, the Prime Minister met the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong, and the Prime Minister explained his position, and I think an advice was communicated. So the Prime Minister advised the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong to revoke the emergency ordinances. So that happened, and I think in the statement which we saw from the Prime Minister's office, in a very polite and very indirect manner, the Prime Minister is saying that Yang Di-Pertuan Agong should act on advice, but the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong did not.
Right.
So the question then becomes, on the 27th, well, let's start with 26th of July, right? Let's start with 26th of July. On the 26th of July, was there a revocation? Okay. From this statement, we learn that the Prime Minister, the Law Minister, the Cabinet, they all knew that there was no revocation. Because like I explained earlier, the revocation requires certain rules and procedures to be followed, mm-hmm. culminating in a gazette. But importantly, they all knew that the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong did not sign. Whether or not His Majesty was right in not signing, let's leave that aside for the time being. But on the 26th, there was no instrument, legal instrument, that has been signed by the YDPA. And it was not gazetted. So why then did the Law Minister stood up to say that it has been revoked when it wasn't? He's the Law Minister. He's not, you know, some random minister in some for some random department. He's presumed to know the laws. I mean, you should, you know.
Should, yeah.
Being the Law Minister, you should. Definitely you should. And the Prime Minister should as well. But he said that Prime Minister was in front of him, did not correct him. In fact, there was no statement, there was no correction whatsoever. There still hasn't been. In fact, he's still, you know, the hole that we described earlier, yeah, it's just kept sinking. So the Law Minister's statement then on the 26th is false and misleading. It's quite clear. Now let's go back to 27. So by the 27, when the PM met the Yang Di-Pertuan Agong to advise on the revocation, the Prime Minister, and this is my take on it, had no power to do so anymore. Mm-hmm. Because Parliament is already sitting. Mm-hmm. And under Article 150, when Parliament sits, the government cannot revoke these ordinances anymore. It can only be annulled by Parliament.
Okay, because Parliament was already sitting.
Yes, and that is implicit in the wordings of Article 150, sub 3. And I think I should read it out. Okay, the proclamation of emergency and any ordinances blah, 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 shall be laid before both houses of parliament. And, here's the operative words, if not sooner revoked, shall cease to have effect if resolutions are passed by both houses annulling such proclamation or ordinance. So let's break this down. Shall be laid before both houses of parliament. It was done, but it was laid as a statement. It's not laid as a motion. And the difference is that for a motion, the house gets to vote on it. For a statement, there is no voting.
Okay.
If not sooner revoked, set on the 26th, no revocation then. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes on to say that shall cease to effect if resolutions are passed by both houses annulling such proclamation or ordinance. So if we take those words, shall be laid before both houses of parliament and shall cease to have effect if resolutions are passed by both houses annulling such proclamation or ordinance, it means that when you lay it before parliament, it needs to be accompanied by a vote. Otherwise, those words shall cease to have effect if resolutions are passed, it loses its meaning. Because there is no need for that. You can just lay it and I don't table it, and then you comply with Article 153. That's not the case.
Yeah.
Article 153 clearly says that it shall cease to have effect if resolutions are passed. So it clearly envisages that there is a voting that is supposed to happen. So on this basis, I'm saying that there is no compliance with Article 153. And on 27th of July, the young debutant Agong, he was right to point out that you have to bring it back to Parliament. Because, you know, PM, you have no power to ask for a revocation anymore. House is sitting. And this is, for me, this is entirely consistent with basic principles of the Constitution, that Parliament passes laws, Parliament makes laws. It's not the executive. The executive enforces laws,
mm-hmm.
carries out certain laws. But it's only a bit different in the times of an emergency,
yeah.
when Parliament is not sitting. So the executive exercises this legislative function through the Yang Diplom Agong. But now that Parliament is sitting, it needs to be exercised by Parliament again. And it is also consistent with the fact that Parliament is supposed to act as a safeguard, supposed to exercise its supervisory function.
That's right.
So for me, the Yang Diplom Agong is justified, is correct, and he told the Prime Minister that it needs to be brought before Parliament. And that has not been done. In fact, what we have seen since the start of the pandemic is at every turn, every single turn, there's been an attempt to frustrate what Parliament is supposed to do. It's supposed to frustrate. There's attempts to frustrate, avoid parliamentary scrutiny. I think that's very worrying as a democracy.
So we're here now with, as we said, the Parliament, the Prime Minister's office not yielding. What might actually happen? I mean, we're seeing people, lodging police reports. You know, I mean, have the government actually done something that's legally wrong? I mean, can they actually, be brought to justice, if that's the correct word to use, for what has happened?
Yes, there is a legal wrong, even though I don't agree with this offence that was ironically made by the Barisan National Government. If I'm not wrong, back in 2014.
Okay.
Back in 2014, there is this, I don't have it before me now, but there is this provision in the Penal Code, Section 124B, activities detrimental to parliamentary democracy. So if you commit or participate in any activity that is detrimental to parliamentary democracy, it's a criminal offence and it can be punishable, I think, up to 15 years imprisonment. So it's a serious offense because it comes under offenses against the state, that chapter of the Penal Code. So activity detrimental to parliamentary democracy has never been defined. And a question was actually posed during the making of the debate of the amendments to the Penal Code introducing this provision. What is activity detrimental to parliamentary democracy? And Nasri asked this, I remember this. He was the law minister then. He said that activity that is detrimental to parliamentary democracy is any activity that is against the federal constitution. So what we have seen, what we have discussed for the past half an hour or so, activities that is, you know, inconsistent with the federal constitution. But you know, I really say that in jest. I don't think it's right to make it an offense. As strongly as I feel, you know, against the government not complying with what's there in the federal constitution, and you know, I strongly disagree with section 124B of the Penal Code. Because, you know, a lot of us breach the federal constitution every day. Freedom of expression, that's right. Your number one, you know.
Yeah.
And most netizens, they go there and defame parliament, defame everyone. You don't make it an offense, you know. Don't imprison people because of that.
Okay.
That's my take.
Okay. All right. I guess, you know, the question on a lot of people's minds is what happens next? You know, what could actually, what might play out after this, you know, after everything that's happened? We have Parliament has been postponed till Monday, am I correct? So a lot of testing was happening yesterday, a lot of reasons for the postponements. But what do you think might actually happen following all of this?
There's a number of motions that is being presented, I think, to the Speaker's office, on the annulling of the ordinances. And I think there's also another one, a motion of no confidence against the Prime Minister. I think that those motions, it needs to see the day of light. It is quite clearly urgent, it's quite clearly of public importance. I say that, of course, you know, in a very wishful manner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect it to happen, but it should happen.
Mm-hmm.
It should be debated. What has happened in the past week or so, in fact, what has happened in the past 7 months, it should be debated in Parliament meaningfully, not without any resolution or any voting at the end. The ordinances needs to be voted on. The motion of no confidence needs to be heard. The statement by the law minister misleading the House, misleading Parliament, that needs to be heard. The royal rebuke by the Yang Dipten Agong, that needs to be debated. All this needs to be debated. So the right thing to do is to extend parliamentary sitting and to debate all of these issues. It does not make sense why we are only sitting for 5 days. You know, they might use COVID again, and that seems to be all too convenient an excuse in this time and age.
Yeah.
What amazes me is that there hasn't been any steps taken to consider other modes of participation if COVID was indeed the case. So that's why I say that, you know, at every attempt, there has been, this government has trying to hide behind standing orders, hide behind rules and procedures, and they have put these rules and procedures on a pedestal even beyond what the function of Parliament is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So all this needs to be done, but it will not be done, because what we have seen and what we can be certain of is what is the right thing, the opposite will be done in this government, and that's very sad. And you know, I'm just putting it out there because I'm sure many out there feels the same.
I think a lot of people feel very helpless, you know. And hearing that, you know, I feel a little bit helpless as well. I don't know. Any we were running out of time, but you know, any message you would have for Malaysians, you know, especially you know, during these times, to kind of like make sense of what's happening, to again remember why they also play an important role, you know, in Malaysia, you know, in the way our country is governed. Any message? I'm looking for any positivity here, Sinew.
sorry. I've been all too depressing for the past half an hour or so. But
rightly so, I must say. It's. I mean, we've never seen this happen. It's you know, unprecedented, right? What's happened?
Yeah, but it's not unexpected.
That's true.
In a way, you know, it's coming for a long, long time. Because for the past 50, 60 years or so since independence, there's been a slow and steady erosion of our democratic institutions and values. And I suppose that's really the danger of the one-party system, you know. So it's only in the recent years that we see more of debates and more public pressure. There's been an expansion of space, which this government, you know, is trying to clamp down on. But even then, I would say to a certain degree that there's been a lot of freedom of speech and expression in recent years. Yeah. And that's because what Malaysians have been doing for the past decade or even two decades or so, that public pressure works if we do not speak out. If we do not tell our friends how unhappy we are, like I'm telling you, everyone now, including you, how angry I am, then, you know, your anger is yours alone. Your view is yours alone. And that shouldn't be the case. If I'm angry, I want to let everybody know I'm angry. And that creates more pressure. That creates a social movement, which would lead to other people pressuring their friends, other people pressuring their family. And once there's enough people who are angry, who are pressured, you know, the politicians, the powers that be, they get scared. Because every 5 years, once, they would have to go back to the ballot box. And even before that, they would have to go back to meet their constituents. They have to meet their friends. They have to meet their families. And if they go back and meet a very angry friends or families or constituents, they would be careful in what they do next. So public pressure works. Don't be too disheartened about what had happened. Be angry, you know, but don't just stop there. Let everybody know. Go public with this. So that's my advice. I think we are doing a great work here, Malaysians. You know, the fact that we are talking about this, And the fact that the Yang Lu Tuan Agong is coming out to say all this, and Parliament, you know, it's fearless in the things that they do. And we saw that in the few days of sitting, even though as meaningless as it is. You know, but you see quite clearly that certain very angry messages are being sent across the floor to the government. So democracy is at work. Government is trying to deny that. Don't be disheartened. Soldier on.
Okay. All right. I think that's a wonderful note to end on. So thank you so much, Sinew, for joining me today. I've been speaking to lawyer Niu Sinew. We were talking about what went down this week over in Parliament. If you missed any part of today's interview, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can search for the podcast on the BFM app. This has been Law and Behold on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.